Hey, it's Bree Bagwell from Only Vans, and 2024 is coming to a close, and we wanted to remind you what's happened this year on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Tom Power spoke to the great Allison Krauss on season 2 of Toy Heart, a podcast about bluegrass.
Can you define what you're looking for when you find a song? Is there anything more than a gut feeling?
It like instantaneously brings pictures. Instantly, it's a movie.
Portland songwriters Anna Tivel and Jeffrey Martin drop by Basic Folk.
I like the way you talk.
I like the way you talk.
Hey, thanks. It's funny to me that you're in the backyard right now and I'm in the house.
And finally, on my podcast, Only Vans, we welcomed another beloved musical couple, Cody and Shannon Canada.
I wasn't a metalhead. I mean, I listened to a little bit, but I had to like sneak it because my mom thought I was going to worship Satan and drink goat blood or some shit.
Parents still think that, by the way.
Thanks for a great year. And listen to all these and more on the BGS Podcast Network or wherever you get your shows.
Hey, it's Cindy and Lizzie here. We've got some exciting things to share with you today. First, we're going to tell you why your support means everything to Basic Folk. And second, we're going to give you the scoop on our brand new logo launching in January. But first, let's get right into it. Our fundraiser is down to the wire. So Lizzie, take it away.
Thanks, Cindy. We've already had some amazing support from listeners like Brandy in Minnesota, Kim in Ohio, Angela in Michigan, and Andrea in Missouri. Huge thanks to all of you. Because of their generosity, we are now just 6 donations away from hitting our goal.
So why support Basic Folk? Okay, here's the deal. We dive deep with our honest conversations with folk musicians, creating a platform that celebrates under-the-radar roots artists. We go beyond the music to explore their stories, struggles, and inspirations. This is a one-of-a-kind space that doesn't exist anywhere else, and none of it happens without your support.
That's right. And your financial support keeps Basic Folk alive. From covering website fees to paying our support staff and production costs, every dollar helps. We are rich in spirit, but we rely on our incredible listeners to keep us rich in resources as well, and keeping our mission moving forward. Right now, we just need 6 more monthly donors to reach our goal. Will you be one of them?
Okay, here is the best part. With our new logo launching in January, all new monthly donors will be the first to rock our exclusive Basic Folk beanie. And these aren't just any beanies. They're actually handmade by my mom, and they're just like little works of art. How adorable is that?
The cutest. The beanies are the cutest. Plus, they're a great way to show your support for Basic Folk. Head to basicfolk.com/donate and sign up as a monthly donor today. It's just $5 a month, and it helps us continue bringing you the stories and music you love. That's basicfolk.com/donate. Or just check out the link in our show note.
Your support means the world to us. Thank you for helping us dignify folk musicians and give them a platform to share their art. Let's hit that goal together. Donate now at basicfolk.com/donate.
Bye.
That was beautiful.
Hello, welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. We are talking to Dave Simonet, the angel human who is also the lead singer for Trampled by Turtles. We will get into that momentarily. But before we do, have you signed up for our newsletter? It's a once-a-month email that lets you know what's going on with Basic Folk, who's been on recently, who's coming up, all of our thoughts and feelings, the best ways to support Basic Folk, which right now we are in the middle of our fall fundraiser, is to make a contribution to Basic Folk. You can give $5 a month. You'll get a Basic Folk beanie that is handmade by my mom. You can make your donation by going to basicfolk.com. You can also check out the link in the show notes, sign up for our newsletter there as well. And you can follow us on social media at Basic Folk Pod, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. All right, let's get into this episode of Basic Folk. I would chat a little bit more, but right now I am visiting a friend in Philadelphia and I am surrounded by baby blankets. And you may hear some babies crying in the background. So let's get into it. Lead singer and songwriter of the bluegrass adjacent Trampled by Turtles, Dave Simonet, is a talented musician and a great outdoorsman. From the small town of Mankato, Minnesota, to the vibrant music scenes of Duluth and Minneapolis, Dave shares his upbringing in a musically inclined, nature-loving family shaped by the sounds of church hymns and classic rock. Dave opens up about his dual passions for music and the great outdoors, recounting his experiences with pheasant hunting and conservation efforts in Minnesota. He reflects on the parallels between the camaraderie found in hunting and playing music, emphasizing the importance of trying new things and embracing the unknown. We also delve into the evolution of Trampled by Turtles' unique sound, described by yours truly as a butterfly's heartbeat, and the band's journey from traditional bluegrass to their own distinct style. Dave talks about the challenges and rewards of maintaining artistic integrity in the music industry by balancing creative growth and commercial pressures. He shares insights on his band's latest project, Always Here, Always Now, a dual EP featuring recordings by both Trampled by Turtles, Always Here, and his solo project, Dead Man Winter, Always Now. He wrote 5 songs, and instead of picking which band to record the tracks, he handed them over to both bands to do what they will with the music. The results are very cool to listen to side by side. The episode wraps up with a fun lightning round where Dave reveals his dream supergroup and favorite Hunter Orange accessory. You gotta be safe out there. All right, we'll get to our conversation with Dave momentarily, but first we're going to check out a clip from the new Trampled by Turtles release. This is Out of Time, featuring Leanne Rimes. Okay, here's Trampled by Turtles, and then we'll get to our conversation with Dave Simonet on Basic Folk. Dave Simonet, welcome to Basic Folk. So nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I have like a million questions about hunting because I'm in Maine.
Okay.
It's hunting season. But we'll get to that in just a moment. But I'm excited to talk to you. You and I did a Folk Alley guest DJ set like many years ago.
Yeah,
but
I
just like, cool. All right. Yeah, I like love talking to you and loved your vibe and have always been a fan of your band. So let's do it.
Thank you very much.
So your hometown is Mankato, Minnesota.
Yeah, that's where okay. I grew up, but I haven't lived there for a long time.
Right. Okay. I was just looking at the Wikipedia page, and you are not on the notable people list, which I think is a severe oversight. Someone who is on it though, Steve Zahn, who we all know and
from
love.
From Mankato. I don't even think I knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, maybe, I mean, Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe I got to get a little older, or maybe they don't want to acknowledge that I'm from there. Depends on who they asked, I guess.
Maybe I'll just have to manually update. I have to learn how to Wikipedia update and fix it. But
maybe we could get the listeners to all send an email or a letter to City of Mankato.
Yes. Great. That'll definitely work. So, Dave, can you set like the musical scene for like what your house looked like growing up? Like maybe like before you developed your own tastes, like when you're a little kid, like what records are being played? Are there any musicians in the family? Was live music a part of your early life?
Sure. Yeah. Live music as like I perform it, not really, wasn't really a part of my life until I was probably a teenager. I think most of the music that I remember as a little kid is my grandmother, who is a violin teacher and a piano teacher. And, taught me piano lessons when I was really young, and she was always playing. My mother was also pretty frequently playing the piano at home in kind of like a maybe stereotypical kind of Protestant way, if that makes sense. Like there's a lot of hymns in my childhood, and that book, like the hymnal was kind of always on the piano. And that as far as like popular music goes, both of my parents were pretty diverse, and I would say pretty diverse musically, but not very passionate musically, if that makes sense. Like,
sure.
I didn't ever see my dad wearing a Led Zeppelin shirt or anything, but, you know, the classic rock was kind of in the radio in the car. And then it's a lot of like acoustic guitar kind of stuff at home. But I think my main memories and the kind of my first experience performing music, but not really for an audience, but just with my own voice or a piano or whatever, was like hymns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that, hymns and also the radio, which is funny because what year were you born in?
1980.
Okay, I'm 82, so I feel like when like people who are our age who have kids, like when they start becoming our age, if that makes any sense, like the radio is not going to come into play like nearly at all.
My kids will probably remember it. I definitely lean on the radio a lot driving around, especially. I have a soft spot for it. I don't know why this would be like a niche thing, but I guess that's where we are. But I love broadcast radio. it's maybe that's like vintage now. I don't know, but. Even stuff, I don't know, I just kind of like as background noise. When I was younger, I used to work kind of various construction jobs, and I had everywhere had like, here it was 92 KQRS, which is like the classic rock radio or sports talk or whatever. And it was never really all my favorite stuff, but it was just kind of constantly there.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe without even me knowing it, and maybe even realizing it until this conversation, but my kids probably will have that as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
We love to hear it as broadcast people.
You bet.
Okay. So when you started developing your own tastes, some of the things that you were gravitating towards was like punk rock, Nirvana, Elliott Smith, of course, Bob Dylan. Where were you finding music when you were in that phase of your life? And I don't know if this question makes sense, but like, how do you think that time in your life where you're like such a sponge for music, how do you think that time in your life impacted the type of like music consumer you are today?
As far as finding music goes, when I was young, the first band I really remember loving was Nirvana, right? And I remember that being like 12. I think I was 12 or 13 when Nevermind came out, and along with a lot of other 12 and 13-year-olds at that time, it kind of like blew my mind, especially from kind of a small Midwestern town maybe or whatever. But I found that via MTV. I remember we got cable that year, and so I had never had...
Just in time.
Yeah. And so for a long time, MTV was how I found everything. And as far as being a consumer, it was going to the I hesitate to call it a record store because I don't think they sold any records at that time, but the record store. And when I moved, when I was 18, I moved to Duluth, Minnesota. That's where Trampled started. Downtown Duluth at that time, there was this giant used book and record store. And I mean, I would spend hours in that place just like scouring the racks. And it was so cheap that I would discover bands by like enjoying their cover art on a record or whatever. And that was a bit of an exploratory period too. But it was definitely very, you know, saw a video I liked on TV, went to the CD store and bought it. And I don't know, for me, I still kind of act like that. Not always. I get sent a lot of music. And find a lot of music, you know, on streaming services and whatnot. I'm a big Bandcamp fan. So part of that still has a little bit of that record store feel where it's not really, there's no algorithm pointing at your face, you know?
Yeah, for sure. The CD store in our mall was called Record Town. And yeah. They did not sell records.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to me that that was the case.
I feel like almost every town had a, you know, something like that, a little place where if you love music,
like a weird mall music store.
Yeah,
Strawberries was another one out here. Did you have Strawberries?
No. Where are you from?
New England.
Yeah, no, we didn't have Strawberries. Yeah. Sam Goody, we had that.
Sam Goody, yes.
The Electric Fetus was kind of the Minnesota. There was three or four of them around the state, and Minneapolis. The Minneapolis one is still open, but that's the last one, I think.
Okay, cool. All right, we could talk about that all day, I'm pretty sure, yeah. But let's keep rolling here. Of course, Bob Dylan, born in Duluth, which is the town that your band formed in. Do you still live in Duluth?
No, I live in Minneapolis now.
Okay, all right. Can you go more into your Bob Dylan story and like what does it mean to you that Bob Dylan is from your home state?
It probably means more to me than it does to him, I imagine. But
we don't know that, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, he was. I wish, and this is completely just ego based, but sometimes I wish I had like a more underground favorite songwriter or something. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, but that just kind of goes to show the power of that guy's career and his use of the language of the English language and song, and it absolutely changed my life listening to his songs when I was young before I started playing guitar. But I mean kind of ruined my life because it made me really want to do that. I wanted to write songs and it's never stopped. Like I still listen to lots of Dylan stuff, and I still find stuff that I'm not really familiar with too. I mean, that's how big his catalog is, but
right.
I really can't overstate the importance of Bob Dylan's music on my life and my career for sure. As far as him being born in Duluth, that's, what can you say? It's super cool. I mean, if you're going to pick somebody as a songwriter, I'm pretty happy to have Bob Dylan Way as the road downtown. And, you know, you can drive by the little house where his parents lived when he was born and stuff like that. And I've done all the little Dylan touristy stuff up there for sure.
Sweet. Right on. Sports, switching from Bob Dylan to sports, very natural progression.
Keep it coming.
So you grew up playing baseball. Any other sports?
No, I mean, I tried lots of sports and I've always been kind of like a C+ athlete, I think, but baseball I played into high school, and then that's kind of the only sport I really would say that I care about now. You know,
basketball.
I mean, I'm 5'8", but I tried playing basketball when I was in elementary school, and so you know, very much smaller, and it didn't take.
Well, I know that you're a Twins fan.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to be.
Is your dog still around, Herbeck?
Yeah, thanks.
Is Herbeck still around? Okay.
Herbeck is still around, yeah.
Great. All right, so sports and music, like what was it like for these two passions to live alongside each other? Like I'm from a town that was like a super sports town, and I'm not into sports at all, and I hated everything about it, and I'm still like kind of recovering from it. But what was that like for you, and like maybe how has that changed for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I was a kid, before music, I thought that baseball was for me, it was the most important thing in the world, and before I wanted to be a songwriter, I wanted to be a baseball player, but I also had a lot of exposure to it. My family, not really, actually, but half of my family, like my mother's side of my family, all played sports. All my cousins, all my uncles and aunts. Every Sunday was football on TV, you know, that kind of thing. And I really didn't know any different. I'm not saying that I would have acted differently, but it was just kind of just normal, I guess you would call it. Like I didn't notice it because it was always there. When I got into music, that kind of changed a little bit. And I really stopped playing. Like I quit baseball and stopped kind of like exploring that world because I had found something else to be passionate about maybe. As far as them coexisting, I feel like it's two completely different things for me, like two different parts of my life. I have yet to write a baseball song, but maybe it'll... My son plays baseball now, and I assistant coach the team, so that's how I ended up using that part of my life, I guess.
Oh, well, you know what? Maybe a baseball song is in your future.
Yeah, at least a metaphor is in there somewhere.
Could be the Steve Goodman of the 21st century.
Or Fogerty.
Oh, no. Please, no. Let's go for Steve Goodman.
All right, fine.
All right. So this is an understatement. You have a huge affinity for the outdoors, and that started really young for you. Like your family would go camping and fishing, and you've since taken up bird hunting as an adult. But how did it all start for you in the great outdoors? Like, what did you like about it as a kid? And when did it become more of like a deeper connection for you?
As a kid, my first really experience with it was I was in Cub Scouts when I was really young. And that included camping trips. And you know, I had to get like perform certain outdoor tasks to get badges and stuff like that. And I loved it from the get-go. My dad kind of joined me in that passion. And so when I got a little bit older, he and I started exploring our kind of wilderness area. Here is the north shore of Lake Superior and the Boundary Waters, which is, for those of you that don't know about that, it's a group of, I don't know how many thousands of lakes, a million acres of wilderness, as the name says, Boundary Waters, right? It's on the boundary of, or the border of Minnesota and Canada. And so going there quite a bit. And that really just, I mean, it's always really kind of been my actual religion is that. And that's where I always felt a connection. I mean, that's an overused and cliche word, I know, but it is that. It's like a place where I just, have always felt connected to the world around me, or maybe even the universe around me on a larger scale. And that's maybe even magnified and gotten more strong as I've gotten older. But as a kid, I remember feeling very abstract about it and very comfortable outside, you know.
You're also a huge advocate for the environment with your work in organizations that help preserve public lands and waters in Minnesota. So how did you originally fall into conservation, and how has that changed your relationship to the land?
Good question. I fell into conservation after I fell into bird hunting, and that was with a friend of mine who was a brand new friend at the time. His name was Bob St. Pierre, and he works for Pheasants Forever. He's a outdoors radio talk show host as well here. And it's a long kind of story how we met up, but he had eventually invited me to come try pheasant hunting with him and his friend and his friend's family in 2018, I think it was.
Back in the 70s.
Yeah, I'm actually 75 years old.
Wow, you look great.
And anyway, I went with him, and no expectations, just thought, you know, try something new, and ended up really loving it. And through that relationship, I kind of, especially through Bob, who is such a conservationist himself with Pheasants Forever, learned that side of the hunting landscape, which is the huge amount of passion and the amount of passionate people that are kind of working day in and day out to keep these public kind of natural landscapes out there and available for people to use. And I really didn't know anything about that before I took up bird hunting. Before that, my kind of scope of public land was maybe limited to like state parks or Yellowstone or something like that. with really not a good understanding of how much other land is really out there in the U.S., which is very different from most countries in the world. And then, you know, there's yes, I want to keep that space open and available because I like to walk around on there and hunt for birds. But they also, these are kind of the last vestiges of habitat that in our country, you know, for everything from a butterfly to a moose or whatever, the whole system that we are very much a part of, even if it doesn't really feel that way all the time. But we rely on that. It's the natural clockwork of the earth, you know, and that protecting those places has just become kind of my biggest, really outside of music and my family, my biggest passion.
Mm. You're on a couple of different hunting podcasts, and you've written essays on hunting and have been interviewed about hunting. So there's a lot of great Dave Simonet hunting content out there. So in an essay on hunting, you wrote the overlap between the worlds of hunting and music is slim. But I feel like, so like I read that story where Bob took you on that hunting trip and you were, you know, you were pretty scared to do it. Like it felt like you didn't grow up hunting and it felt like the barrier was like impenetrable. But you were like surprised at like how amazing the experience was, how welcoming the community is. And I feel like the fact that hunting was something entirely new could parallel your experience as a professional musician in times of like when Trampled by Turtles was like on the rise or when you were trying something new. Like that's where I see the parallels between music and hunting. But I wonder, does that ring true for you? And if not, like, where have you found the overlap between hunting and music?
It does ring true. And I think in that particular essay, I think I was more talking about the amount of people that cross over. Like, I don't know a lot. I know a few now because of the, you know, podcasts and articles or whatever. People, we kind of reach out to each other. But I would say the most of the musicians that I know haven't hunted. And that's just my perspective, right? So that world to me, it feels, it doesn't, nothing, you know, nothing's concrete or whatever, but as far as trying something new, that's the most, I mean, that's it, right? That's like, that's the exciting part of anything. And, it really, I think it is probably sadly true that as we get older and kind of more set in our ways, it's harder and harder to kind of look like an idiot in front of other people. I know I feel a little sometimes bashful about that kind of stuff, but I think that the benefit of whatever it is, maybe you want, you know, maybe it's golf, you know, whatever, but people, I think just picking stuff up along the way is always exciting. And maybe 9 out of 10 things don't stick, you know, but I feel a little bit worried that if I were to stop searching for new experiences, that there'd be negative consequences for that.
Hmm. Yeah. I found a couple different parallels between hunting and music, or like maybe not parallels, but like one huge difference between hunting and music, I think, is noise. Like as a musician, like you're making lots of sounds. You're around a lot of sounds, you know, in concert. There's audience sound, there's band sound, but when you're hunting, there's probably not so much noise going on. So how does the quiet of hunting impact you maybe as a musician, or maybe it doesn't impact you at all? And I was just trying to think about this, like, are there any traditions of hunters that you know of, like hunters specifically, like making music while on a hunting trip or somehow like surrounded by music? Like I mentioned, like I'm in Maine. There's like a ton of like, there's a huge tradition of like fiddle music that's like surrounding like the old timey logging industry. But I was like wondering if there's anything like that when it comes to hunting.
To your first part of that question, the quiet, absolutely. And I, that like getting off home from a tour, say, and then this just happened recently. Actually, we played not tour, but a very big show for us. We just played kind of our first co-headlining arena show here last week. With the Avett brothers, and a lot going on that day, and the, you know, a huge crowd for us in this big, loud and bright, and you know, you can kind of imagine the environment. You've been to an arena concert before, I'm sure. And the next day, I was on my way out, and I went grouse hunting for 3 days. And so that dichotomy is wonderful. I mean, there's nothing that I would want to do more after that a concert experience, which was great in its own right. But just to do the complete opposite and not talk to anybody and just walk around with my dogs. And so, yeah, there's a balance there. I think it's hard to say what my normal, anybody's normal state would be, because for me, that's just like it depends on my mood, I guess. But I definitely feel more at peace and content when I'm out in the outdoors. And then the chaos of touring and the chaos of playing shows and the energy involved in that, and the spikes and valleys of your chemicals in your brain and all that is a gas too. But I need both sides of that coin, I think. As far as a tradition of hunting music, I know of a few kind of scattered songs maybe, but I don't know of like a hunting genre, you know, like what you're talking about of logging. Yeah. There's a lot of logging songs or you know, there's a lot of coal mining songs, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm just not familiar with it.
All right. Well, let me know.
I will. Yeah, I'll look.
Okay. So also, full disclosure, I've never hunted before, but like, I really want to. And
really?
Yeah, I feel like I've come up here and I live in Maine now. This is like a new thing for me living in Maine. And we own a house in the country, and it's like hunting is like a huge, like you can't really hike in the woods at this time of year because of hunting.
Except on Sundays, right? Isn't it so illegal there?
You got it, right. Except on Sundays, you have to wear the full orange every time you walk out the door and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I want to live off the land, like chop wood, you know. But
happy to help along that journey if you really want to.
All right, great. Good. Oh, it's good to know I have friends to call upon.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just full disclosure, I've never hunted before, but and the other thing is I'm not a musician. So I'm not a hunter and I'm not a musician. So these are two observations I have that may or may not be true, but I feel like there's this like deep connection when you play music with people, and also like when you are on a hunt, you know, with a group of people. So how do you compare the two different types of bonds that you can share with people, like those shares with your bandmates, fellow musicians, and those in your hunting party?
Sure. Yeah. It's a kind of a camaraderie. Yeah. I guess I would have a hard time comparing the two, because my relationship, I can see the parallel, but my relationship with my bandmates is it's the longest relationship I've ever had, you know, really. And the closest one. And there's a certain amount of, people maybe call it chemistry or something when we're on stage with each other or in the studio, or whatever. A lot of stuff goes unsaid, you know, because it doesn't need to be. People can read each other. The first time we play a song together, we probably will end it at the same time, if that makes sense. Like, we know each other really intimately, especially musically. But we've also slept next to these guys for 20 some years too, you know what I mean? I don't really have anybody in the hunting space that I can compare that to, but I will say that while the thing is happening, like when you're on stage, you have a relationship with when I'm on stage, have a relationship with my bandmates. That's kind of a codependent relationship. We both really depend on each other for the song to work. You know, if I'm playing my part on the guitar and Tim on the bass starts playing a different song, obviously it's not going to work out. And so I can see a comparison there. When you're walking, say, on a big field for pheasants or whatever, there might be a line of five or six of us walking down that field, and you're relying on everybody, not only with open communication, but for safety. If anything should, you know, go wrong, you're relying on them. A lot of times we're pretty far away from the nearest hospital or anything like that, you know. And so there's a certain amount of, even, you know, and this happens with me a lot, because the last couple of years I've gone out with people that I met out there. And so it is interesting to be like, hey, my life is in your hands, nice to meet you, kind of relationship. And so there's I feel a little bit of that in music too. And obviously it's less, maybe less physically dangerous on stage, but that's not always the case either.
Hey, it's Cindy and Lizzie. We're down to the wire on our fundraiser, and we're just 6 donors away from our goal.
Thanks to listeners like Brandy from Minnesota and Kim from Ohio, we're so close. Now we need your help to push us over the finish line.
When you support Basic Folk, you're helping us create honest conversations with folk musicians, sharing their stories, struggles, and inspirations, which in turn allows us to feel less alone and seen and supported in the world.
Hell yeah.
This is the only space like it, and we can't do it without you.
Plus, when you become a monthly donor, you get first dibs on our brand new Basic Folk beanie, launching in January with our fresh new logo and handmade by Cindy's mom. How sweet is that?
So sweet. Head to basicfolk.com/donate to make a monthly gift today. Just $5 a month helps keep this show alive and thriving.
That's basicfolk.com/donate or click the link in the show notes. Thank you for supporting the music and stories you love.
Bye.
Bye.
Your band Trampled by Turtles, if people are just tuning in and hearing about Trampled by Turtles for the first time, welcome to the party. The band originated in the early 2000s in Duluth, Minnesota. You started off as like a pretty traditional sounding bluegrass band as people who had not played bluegrass previously. And so like now I want to talk about the sound that like you've developed over the past several records. It feels like so much your own. And I was trying to like Trampled by Turtles has this like type of sound that I feel like it could be similar to like what a butterfly's heartbeat might sound like. There's like this like fast paced, yes, beautifully orchestrated sound that you all create. It's like not hard hitting or corny, like it grooves, but it's really gentle. Like it's a really cool, subtle and delicate balance. I don't know if that resonates. Yeah.
I mean, I love that. It's beautiful. I wish you, I hope you wrote it down. I imagine.
I wrote it down.
Can you send it over?
Yeah, I'll put it on a postcard.
Thank you. I love that description. I would love to agree with that.
Cool. So I don't know if, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah, I think so.
But like, what do you attribute to the evolution of like the band's sound when thinking about all those descriptors?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into us. I hope growing and evolving over time. I really don't see an alternative for being in a band together with the same people for this long. But I think mainly it's just age. I say that not just like, oh, we're old, so we play older people music now, even though I do think that's probably true compared to when we were in our early 20s. But there's this, you know, the idea of kind of aging gracefully is something I take really seriously in music. And in my own music, and to me that just means remaining true to whatever the new, you know, when we're, say I'm writing a new batch of songs for a record, and that growing and aging gracefully in the band to me means that I want to write the songs that I want to write on that, at that period of time. Not, is this going to sound good to our fans, or does this sound like our band, or whatever. And I think to just stay in that lane of following whatever this thing goes, you know, who knows where creativity comes from? I don't know where a song comes from, you know, let alone all the other parts that go into making it. But just to feel something and to make it and to kind of do it for myself, like I have to like it, and then we bring it to the band. And so I think just out of sheer odds, like if I keep doing that, it's going to sound a little different because I'm a little different, you know. Mm-hmm. My chemistry is a little different, my living situation is different, my relationships are different every time I write a batch of songs. And so, and everybody else in the band is the same. They're different too. Mm-hmm. So it's I don't like using the word honesty in music. I feel like that has nothing to do with it. I think it's just, for me, it's like, I just want to make the music that I want to make. And it's really as simple as that, like a spoiled kid, you know?
Yeah. I actually had a question about, so instead of using the word honesty, I feel like a good replacement for that would be integrity, you know? And that my question was about, like, it sounds like you are pretty aware of like protecting the band's integrity and protecting like who you are in terms of like your musical identities and respecting like where you're evolving and where you are in life versus like what's good for the band's bottom line, what's good for like exposure, what's going to get the clicks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's our, it's our living, and so those things come up in conversation, but they never, never's iffy too, but I can't remember a time when that's ever come up in creating the actual art part of what we do. You know, there's a lot of logistics in booking shows and you know, doing press, like talking to you, for instance, that those parts of the career are thought about. And everybody who does this for a living or anything for a living has to think about that, you know? But as far as the actual music goes, I don't know if we would even be able to do, like to write a popular song or to write a song that would, you know, work for us on TikTok. I don't know that we have it, and it definitely doesn't come up. I'll say that. And I don't, you know, integrity in that way to me, I don't want to take away from what other, I don't want to slander what other people's approaches are, because there's a lot of people that do think about that a lot, and because they've come up in that world, you know, and for them, the music business is clicks, or, you know, to oversimplify it. And I'm kind of like live and let live in that way, where I would never look down on somebody for finding a way to make a living playing music, because it's incredibly difficult to do. And it's just gets harder. I mean, not only don't people buy music anymore, but they buy fewer concert tickets now. And like all of the money that flows into the music business, the smaller and smaller part of it goes to the actual artists and songwriters. Really, in my opinion, I'm sure there's a engineer at Spotify that can tell me it's something else. But anyway, I like the word integrity, but I don't want it to be like a moral judgment on people. I feel like everybody's allowed to do whatever they, you know, everybody's allowed to make art however they want. And if somebody, you know, like did David Bowie have integrity? I don't know. There's so many people that are classic, well-known Hall of Famers in the music world, and there's a lot of those people that made a lot of their decisions for money or whatever. And to me, it's just like I try to keep the music separate from all that, but it's harder now than probably it was before.
Trampled by Turtles does not play with a drummer, which was like hard for you guys at first, but now it's actually too hard to play with a drummer. So how has your relationship to rhythm changed because of Trampled by Turtles?
That's a good question, yeah. Trampled by Turtles, as you've just suggested, rhythmically is fairly elastic, especially on stage. But it works because we, you know, with some exceptions, maybe an exception a night, but most of the time we all move together. And that's part of just that intimate musical knowledge we have of each other. I've tried to do that with other people and it doesn't work for, you know, whatever reason. We have had a drummer come in and play. We had a couple songs on our record Trouble a long time ago with a drummer, and he played with us live a couple of times, and he did perfectly, you know, but for us, it felt wrong. And it showed us that we suck, but we all suck together. And so it works, you know. So it's taught me that, yeah, that rhythm. You know, some drummers I know and love call it a pocket. You know, it's like you can have a deep, deep pocket where your count can be a little blurry to a certain point before it gets really bad. And sometimes that outer blurry edge is really where it feels either, you know, like sexy or swingy or you know, like I think about like early 70s Rolling Stones records, you know what I mean? No, obviously no click track, but that's wide, sloppy, not sloppy, but slurry maybe kind of groove sound. And so when I talk about us not being very good at music, I like to say it like that, so it makes us sound cooler and that we're trying to do it on purpose. But that's, I dig it though. It's nice to, you know, all six of us can kind of make a rhythm together. Eric, our mandolin player, has made the analogy of us all being a different part of a drum kit together, you know, which to me makes sense. And as far as not having anything keeping that time for everybody else. I don't see another option, really. You have to trust the people you're next to.
Nice. So Trampled by Turtles started breaking through and landing crossover appeal like around 2012. And you started playing festivals back then, like that were like more seen as like crossover rock and roll festivals, like Coachella and Lollapalooza and stuff. And it seems like if you think back at that time, like that was like at the peak of the music festival revival. And Trampled by Turtles have been around for that rise. And now we are seeing the fall of music festivals and also the evolution of like vacation music festivals, cruise music festivals. You're playing a vacation music festival in Cancun in January. Trampled by Turtles is playing Dead Ahead in Cancun. From your perspective, like how has the music festival changed since those days of like the heyday of Coachella and Lollapalooza and Bonnaroo?
I agree with you too. I feel like I think we might sound like crabby old people talking about festivals like that, like back in the good old days. But I don't know. I feel pretty lucky to have played those things when we did. And we definitely don't get asked to play those particular festivals much anymore. And I also think that just the lineup choices have kind of moved on from a band like ours. And really more towards, and I kind of have to tread lightly here because I have a lot of respect for the promoters. I, you know, talk about trying to make a living playing in a band. It's pretty hard to make a living put on a festival too. And a lot of the choices they make now is more probably based on more, you know, social media presence a lot of times than these are the metrics that they have to work with right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I also think that there's that weird little wrench of the couple of COVID years really, really changed the way that people consume live entertainment. And I think a lot of people, especially people my age, our age and older, got really kind of comfortable not herding in with 100,000 other people into a hot field, you know? And so I do think that some of the smaller festivals are doing really well right now and a little bit more catering to, it's just a different experience, you know, a different concert going experience. As far as the mega giant ones, I mean, I haven't really been around there for a little bit. And there's, you know, like there's also, okay, I compare it maybe to Minneapolis, breweries in Minneapolis like 10 years ago. You couldn't throw a rock without hitting a brewery in Minneapolis. And there's just this, oh, it's popular, let's all make one. And there's a natural swell, and then there's a natural like falling off from the edges of, you know, and there's like the 10 that will probably be there as long as they want. And maybe festivals are kind of like that too. There was there's a time, and it really isn't really that far behind us because it still happens, but a time when every, you know, in every state and every weekend of the year, there's something. There's some event and some festival. And I appreciate that because that gave us work for a long time and it still does, you know, but it's naturally, I think there's only, you know, there's only so many that can really survive.
Mm-hmm. So Dave, you have a few side projects. You have your own solo project under your own name. You have your drone project, More Light, and your other solo project, Dead Man Winter. And I know that other members of Trampled by Turtles have solo projects and side projects as well. Like, what's the benefit for you to partake in musical projects outside of your main gig?
Creativity, really. And that's just a different, just, it's, you know, music. It's, music is so big. And I don't get to play it with as everybody that I'd like to. And so just once in a while, it's almost like a, for both, like it's kind of like a palate cleanser. It's like a piece of ginger, you know what I mean? Just to go with a different group of people, friends of mine too, people I know, like Dead Man Winter, for example, and just make music that sounds, it's as simple as that, like it sounds different. It's different people playing it, different instruments sometimes. And just to change it and think about a song in a different way with a different instrumentation and with different personalities next to me in the studio or on stage. I've always felt that that's really important, and I've always tried to do that. And whenever I feel a little bit, if I start to feel stagnant or something, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, maybe I should try making a song with somebody I haven't done it with before. Or, you know, as far as more light, making music that I haven't really made before and with new people. And I think that that just kind of fuels, it makes me more excited to create stuff. The older we get, I kind of say that a lot, but the older we get, the more time, more ideas I need to keep finding to make it exciting to make new stuff. Because I've made a lot of songs, you know, and I'm lucky to be able to say that. But I still want to make more. And sometimes I want to try to make them in new ways just to, you know, I learn a lot. It makes something hopefully artistically that sounds different or feels different. And so I'm always going to be searching for that. It's important. I think the other guys feel the same way.
Mm. The new project is a combo album. It's called Always Here, Always Now, and it's two EPs, 5 songs, but 10 recordings of these 5 songs. The songs are written by you, and then those 5 songs were recorded by Trampled by Turtles, as well as Dead Man Winter, your solo project, which I think is such a cool idea. The execution is also excellent. Musicians in the past have like done stuff like this, like record a song with their band and then record it solo. What's been your experience like as a music listener with that practice? And sorry, I know I asked like 3 questions in 1 and this is like a big one.
I'm listening.
Yeah, you're a really good listener. What has been your experience with that practice? What takeaways have you like concluded from, you know, some of your favorite musicians who've done that? And then did you feel any of those conclusions with your own songs and your own bands?
So I think that I don't have a lot of experience with, well, I mean, I've listened to some of these records, right? Most recently, the one I can think of is Conor Oberst did, I forget the name of his album, maybe we can look it up, but did a record and then did, you know, the other record that came out at the same time was just him on piano playing the song solo, right? So like you said, it's the band, like the produced thing and then the stripped down thing.
Right. Randy Newman has done that.
Yeah. And I love that stuff. I mean, I love bootleg series, Dylan stuff, you know, the other versions of records that come out sometimes. I think that's really interesting as a fan. But in this one, I didn't want to make it like a main record and then like the weird one. You know what I mean? Like here's the record and then here's me and drunk in my room playing the demos or whatever. I love that, but that's this was.
We want those too.
Yeah, they exist. but this more, I wanted to make two of the main record, you know, and it really just came from a simple indecision, indecisiveness on my part, which was I was writing these songs, and we had just made a Trampled album, so I was kind of leaning and doing something else, but then as I was recording them like demos or whatever myself and writing them, I really wanted to play him with those guys. And so, I kind of just realized that there's really nothing telling me I can't do both of it. And then it became a really fun project. As far as like, I don't know if I'd take away something directly from the other people that have done something similar before, except that I've generally enjoyed it, that like listening to it. I've generally enjoyed the concept. and I really enjoyed the process, I'll say that. And it would just having, I'm also really lucky. As a side note, I love recording with both of these groups of people. And it's like, you know, I've played with Trampled forever and I'm talking about how that kind of, you know, connection that we have. Dead Man Winter, the guys in that band and I have played for a long time now too, really. A couple of people have kind of switched in and out, but the group that I recorded with, I played music with them for over a decade, you know? So it wasn't like pulling names out of a hat or anything like that, but I really loved it. It was really fun. It was simple. I mean, honestly, both bands like to record live, so it wasn't a huge difference in approach, but it's just the fact that it's, you know, it's kind of exploring that the human element is the real deal, and that's the difference maker. It's like you grit the same song with the same songwriter and the same singer and guitar, and then put the different humans around and give their interpretations of what that song means to them. And, you know, I could have made 10 of them, 10 different versions, you know, with different groups of people. And I feel like they'd all sound different.
Yeah. Okay. So you're explaining the approach just now, and I'd like to hear like more about that, like the quote that's floating around with all your press. No press release, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. This is me just pulling questions out of the air. Congratulations. I'm really good at it. One of the quotes that was floating around with your press was that you thought it would be interesting to see how both of these bands would approach the same material. So can you go into like where were you as like the writer and mastermind of this great experiment in both bands' approach? Like where were you and then what were the bands doing?
I wasn't anywhere. I just showed up with the songs, honestly. And that's how kind of I always am with Trampled, is that, you know, I get the song to a place where I can play it in my house. You know, there's a chord progression, there's a melody and lyrics, and then at the group figures out their parts pretty much. With there's always communication because we're all in the studio together, but there's not a lot of arranging of anybody else but themselves, and that even generally includes vocal harmonies and stuff like that as well, though in Dead Man Winter I have a little bit more to do with that. But so it's pretty much just me showing up and playing the songs. And then they're like, all right, let's go try it. Tim, who is a bass player in both bands, is a little bit why this is cheating, because that's a pretty integral part. And so he came to the second session, which was Dead Man Winter, already knowing the songs. Where the other guys, to their credit, didn't listen. I sent everybody the Trampled stuff, but no, they all kind of decided they didn't want to hear it, you know. So it was really... I guess I'm just not really much of like a conductor in a studio setting. I really kind of like to know what I'm doing. And I love where people just come up with ideas, especially people I trust musically. We'll just come up with stuff, which I feel like can sometimes be hampered by too much direction, you know?
Mm. I'm wondering, like, with two different recordings of these five songs, like, how did hearing the different recordings like change the meanings or change your relationships with the songs?
I don't think I had any real deep change in the two recordings. I feel like...
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. I think that... And I'm always guilty of liking whatever the newest thing is the best, you know? And so, you know, I was really happy with how the Trampled stuff came out. And then we did the Dead Man Winter recordings and I was like, no, I like this better. But it was just newer, and now that I've had time to sit with it, I and it sounds wishy-washy maybe, but I really like both of them, and I can't really think of a song that I like one better than the other, though that does change if I listen. Now that it's out, I haven't listened to it, honestly. That's kind of how I do that.
I can't decide either, and I was actually like, so truth be told, I was not familiar with Dead Man Winter's previous releases. I was familiar with your Dave Simonet record. And then I was like, okay, this is going to be totally fucking weird and freaky, freaky deaky. And I turned it on. I was like, this is fucking great. Like, I mean, weird and great in like a good way is what I was like expecting. But I was like, man, this is a fucking real band. sounded great.
Yeah, well, those guys are a real band. You know that? I mean, yeah. Everybody in Dead Man Winter plays in 100 bands in town, in Minneapolis. And these guys are like chops for days, you know? And exactly what is on the record is that. It's just me kind of really throwing the songs out, and everything was tracked live in a room. And it was just the sound of that group of people playing music with each other, which I love, you know. I love how loose it gets and how live it sounds. I don't know. It's a really fun way to make music. And I know there's infinite ways to record music now, and that's still my favorite, is just put the people in the same room so they can see each other and just play.
Mm. So you just got married in September. Congratulations.
Thank you.
To your longtime partner. The song Out of Time on the new release, the Trampled by Turtles version, by the way, that's the song with Leanne Rimes, or one of the songs with Leanne Rimes. So the song Out of Time reflects on how we don't have as much time as we would have thought that we did, which I'm always thinking like, oh yeah, I'll learn Spanish. I have plenty of time. But, you know, it's so true. Like, how are you feeling about time these days? Like, how are you working to make the most of it or slow it down?
Oh, man, if you find a way to slow it down, let me know. But
okay.
I feel the same way that I feel like I always have, and that's just like you said, that there's just not enough of it. And I feel that way all the time, that you know, 80-90 years or whatever is actually a really short amount of time to do anything. I think I have, you know, it's Halloween tomorrow, and from last Halloween to this Halloween doesn't feel very long. And so to get like, if you're lucky to get 85 of those, you know, doesn't seem like a lot. And so I just want to pack it all in as much as I can. Music, hunting trips, hanging out with my kids, traveling, and whatever it is. And there's, you know, and I think to me that I hope that that breeds not a fear, but more of an appreciation. And I try to use, I'm guilty of wasting time just as much as anybody else. But as you know, when it counts, to try to really use that for all it's worth. And to not get, I would say also to not get caught up on the stuff that you can't fit in, you know. I hope you learn Spanish, right. You know, but if it doesn't happen, I'm sure there's something else will take its place.
Yeah, for sure. There's just like so much there. Yeah, I feel like somebody at one point said that, like a friend of mine shared this quote of like, you're never going to read everything. You're never going to hear everything. You're never going to watch everything. So just like fucking relax.
That's a bitch. I rage against that though. I'm like, why not?
Well, I mean,
why is it that way? I can't stand it.
I salute you. I commend your efforts.
Thank you.
To read, see, and hear everything.
Yeah. Every little thing. I do want to, there's never, you know, there's never going to be enough time to write all the songs. And nobody, you know, this is all stuff like people say at a funeral probably, but it you never know it's going to be your last record, you know what I mean? And so I take it seriously, you know.
You never know when you're going to watch your last TikTok.
Yeah. No, that would be a dumb way to go. Yeah.
So
in my opinion.
Before I let you go, will you do a quick lightning round with me?
What is that?
I'm just going to, so it's like what we've been doing. I'm going to ask you questions, but you just have short, little, fast, quick answers, and it's a whole lot of fun.
I'm really bad at trivia if this is something like that. So I'm going to do it, but just, you know.
Disclaimer. It's about you. It's about you and your opinions.
Okay.
Okay. Lightning round. Dave Simonette, you are in a super group. Who is in the band with you?
Oof. John Bonham, Tim Saxhawk. I'm a bass player. He's playing bass. Who else is in the group with me? Bruce Springsteen on lead guitar. The entire band of Low is singing harmonies, and then maybe that's it for now.
What is your favorite Hunter Orange accessory?
what am I even having around? No, I have this really great old like 70s Pheasants Forever hat. That's my favorite thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What is one instrument you wish you could play?
I really wish I could play the piano. I can play a couple chords, but I wish I was a good piano player.
Oh, I want that for you.
Thank you. That's one of the things on my list.
What is one song you wish you had written?
One song I wish I had written. Yeah, that's all right. I can't think of that so fast. One song.
Put me in, coach. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
You're gonna make me lonesome when you go by Bob Dylan.
Oh, man, that's a good one. Okay, yeah. This is the last lightning round question. Where are the dogs sleeping at night?
They sleep very soundly in their kennels downstairs.
Oh,
away nice. From me. Yeah, unless we're grouse hunting in my tent last weekend, then they're sleeping right on top of me.
All right, Dave, thank you so much.
Cindy, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thanks. Also, side note, thanks for doing all that research. That doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Alex Stanton composes our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can check us out on folkalley.com and Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app, or listen wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, I suggest sharing it with a friend who loves music and hunting, living off the land and playing the banjo at the same time. That's the person that you want to send this episode to. And we thank you very much for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.